Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling?
Oh, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes for the biggest weekend in professional wrestling for the year 2023. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. And of the two of us, only one of us have been talking to the feds, Chris.
That's true. I drove extremely north and into the hinterlands. And
Wait, hold on.
I believe that if you're above elevation 8,000 feet, the feds can't catch you.
Oh, well, that's a good thing. No, no, no. I had a nice 45-minute hour conversation with the FBI and the Department of Justice this week. Not as a defendant, perhaps, but as a victim of a crime. Google Atlas Trading. And look up the pump and dump. I was one of the people who got suckered into the pump and dump. That it's still intimidating, though, even if you're not on trial. You're just like, boy, I'm hoping I'm of any help. And also, I found myself, because it's odd because I live alone, Chris, I can get conversational. And I almost feel like I'm being too conversational with the feds.
Yeah, right. You're like a little lonely, and you're compensating for your loneliness.
Yes, exactly.
With the feds.
It's like an old joke I had. It's like, hey, you know what? If you can't afford therapy, just schedule yourself some job interviews. You can get a good 10 minutes of healing in before they throw you out.
I went to lunch with a friend here this week, and we were catching up. And at the end of it, she was like, well, I got to go to my therapist and
talk about this.
And I was like sitting there, like, I was like, I feel like we were just doing that though for the last hour.
Wait, this was in therapy?
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. I was like, wait, what was this? This is just lunch.
Well, I'm sending you the bill. So
yeah, no, I was hearing a lot. Yeah. I was hearing a lot about this person's life.
And I was saying, how does that make you feel?
And yes.
Then not giving you anything to heal it. Like, oh, I'm just here to listen. Our time is up.
There was a little bit of that. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Our time is up. And then the doctor, came on. Yeah. Yeah.
You should have had a ding on your phone. Well, that's our time.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
There'll be no dessert.
Up. Oh, you know what that piano music means.
Getting intro'd out of her own lunch. Playing you off. This isn't the Academy Awards. You don't get to make the speech. You're just a supporting actress tonight.
That was one of my favorite bits on that old show. There's one episode where Gilbert Godfrey gets very upset that he's getting played off by the piano at the end. And it's very funny.
Oh, Gilbert was just great.
Yeah, he was. He was really good on that show.
I think the theme for this week, kids, and I call you all kids lovingly, I think everybody gets what they want this weekend. I think we're going to come out of this weekend all very happy with professional wrestling for once. It's one of those years where you know what they should do, and I think they're going to do it. I don't think there's going to be a lot of swerves. And hey, if you're not a WWE fan, let me plug this, because we are not going to preview this. That Ring of Honor card, if you like good wrestling matches with absolutely no build and really no stakes because the Ring of Honor titles don't matter, That's your card, man. El Hijo del Vikingo versus Commander. Mark Briscoe versus Samoa Joe. Tanahashi and Daniel Garcia. Let me get some of these. Oh, Eddie Kingston and Cesaro and Claudio Castagnoli. Almost used his WWE name. I apologize. You know, Athena and Yuka Sakazaki. Great match. And then that ladder match for the vacant tag team titles. I mean, those are great. Oh, yeah, you get a 6-man tag title match, but who cares about that? But yes, you get. Yeah, I mean, that's just a solid, solid action card. If that is your thing, you can watch that on Honor Club tomorrow night, Friday night, or tonight, depending on when this comes out. But we will preview both NXT Stand and Deliver and both nights of WrestleMania in a bit. But in the news room, Vince McMahon will reportedly be at WrestleMania. And I love that this was like leaked as something. Now, I don't know if he's going to be on WrestleMania or not. I suspect that there is a slight chance, Chris, that he is given... I mean, for the most part, what I'm thinking is he'll be in a suite and any business suitors will be there with him for the sale, the quote unquote sale, the fictional possible sale they're doing. What are the chances, Chris, percentage wise, that Vince McMahon opens this show and does the welcome to WrestleMania thing?
The percentage chance that he does the actual welcome to WrestleMania thing.
Yeah, he gets the music and he gets sent to the ring given all this stuff that's been in the news.
I'm still going to put that low. I'm 15%, I think.
I'm going to go slightly higher. I think chairman of the board of this company, damn it. This is my WrestleMania. I get to have a moment. I don't worry about these fans. They'll love me, and the fans would love him. I think most of that stadium would cheer. There'll be some boos. I got it at 25 or 30% here.
Man, I hate to say it, but I think you're right about that stadium cheering for him.
WWE fans love WWE.
Everything we know about him. No, yes. I know that, but like, no, you actually don't have to congratulate ISIS.
You don't have to hand it to them.
You don't have to hand it to us.
Rounding out this year's Hall of Fame class, Stacy Keibler. Fascinating induction, but you know, it's also right on brand. So your four inductees, and I've seen some people call this a great class, and I've seen some people call this the worst Hall of Fame class ever. Your headliners are Rey Mysterio Jr., the Great Muta, Andy Kaufman, and Stacy Keibler. Muta alone makes it for me. I'm sorry, and I love Ray. But your inductors are also Conan and Ric Flair. And again, possibly Bob Zmuda. I forgot who's inducting Keibler. Maybe Trish? I don't have that in front of me, but... Any thoughts or snark or jokes you want to make?
So, like, even if you look at this class in the most negative of lights, and just to sketch that out real quickly, Andy Kaufman was never in WWE or anywhere close to WWE.
No.
Muta never wrestled a match in WWE.
Correct.
And Stacy Keibler's run in WWE... Frankly, a lot of it can't be repackaged and recapped.
Very true as well. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yes, you're correct.
Like, so all of those three are very flawed. Even if you acknowledge all of that, at the end of the day, you are still left with, at the top of that, Rey Mysterio.
One of the greatest talents WWE ever had.
Yes. And really, I mean, just like a generational talent.
One of the best
wrestlers of the 1990s.
Yes, but I mean, his WWE run... For me, look, I love ECW and WCW Ray. WWE Ray never did all that much for me, to be honest with you, because it was like, okay, but he could do it over and over again. And he could do it for a long time, and he's done it for a long time. And they mistreated that guy because he was small. When they wanted to put the belt on him, no, people won't believe a guy that size can win, blah, 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 squash him by the Big Show later, you know? And he's done so much for that company. That's the thing that overrides his work for me. He's a bankable star who has been there for, God, over 20 years.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's not as though the work wasn't there for years at a time, especially earlier in his career. Like, the guy, his WCW stuff was so inspired. He was, he was just like, for an American audience, such a groundbreaking talent, and like his ability to connect as a babyface was so profound. Even in those undercard slots, people loved Ray.
Oh no, he helped that cruiserweight division.
Oh yeah,
so much. And look, the first time I saw him on ECW, because I had heard about Worlds Collide through reading the internet message boards at that time. When he debuted against Psicosis.
Yep.
In ECW. I think that was I can't remember if that was the tag match with Conan and I can't remember the four. I think Juventud might have been the fourth. I don't know. But anyways, that first street fight that Psicosis and Ray had was just sublime. And it was awesome. And it was leading to, I think, November to Remember of that year. Maybe it was another one. I can't remember. But dude, you're just like blown away by the stuff he could do. And then he got in there and then he started wrestling like Dean Malenko. And Dean was his best foil always, I thought.
It's like a toss up between him and Dragon for me.
Because no, Dragon was good.
Dragon, I felt
Psicosis
like
was good. Eddie was good. I mean, look, you can pick anybody.
That division was loaded anyways. It's not like Dragon and Malenko couldn't have a good match together either. Ray's a legend. Like, I think it's easy to forget how important he is to the business, the art form, the thing that is professional wrestling. Because, for example, yes, we love to razz on Mysterio Family Theater and the WWE presentation of him. Like,
yes.
But like if Jeff and I were writing for Rey Mysterio, we would never have had Rey stuck in a stun lock talking about how Dominic is his son and he loves his boy and he misses his boy who is his son, who is Dominic. Like, you know, we would be presenting this guy the way I think you and I both see him, which is this is a living legend. This is like
he's a living legend of Lucha, is what he is.
Yeah, he is like the crossover Lucha talent too.
Yes. He's the guy who made it marketable in the States.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, because it was not Mil Máscaras or like, you know.
No, Mil Máscaras is a legend. And he'd be the first to tell you that.
Yeah, no one's quicker to volunteer that than Mil.
Ask Cactus Jack about Mil Máscaras. I'm not jobbing to him. Mil came in as a guest star and refused a job. Ray, and he made it cool, and he made small guys marketable too. Because, I mean, look, the malfeasance that WCW did with all those guys in the cruiserweight division to feed them dudes like Hall and Nash and everything, it's understood. But those guys were over in front of those Nitro crowds in that first hour, especially in that first year in Nitro. You 96, watched that show.
Yeah. Oh, dude, watch those 96 shows. So, and those guys would often carry the WCW Saturday nights too. And they always gave the people who came to see Saturday night a good show.
Naomi is done with the WWE. She announced she'll be going, I believe, by Trinity or Trinity Fat 2 if she chooses to go to another Fed. And I'll loop in this one too, because we missed this a couple weeks ago. Nikki and Brie Bella both announced that their contracts with WWE had expired and was mutually agreed to not to renew their contracts as they wanted to start a new chapter in their lives, and they have subsequently rebranded themselves as the Garcia Twins. Any thoughts on any of them and what the future may hold?
For the Garcia Twins.
Or Naomi.
Or Naomi.
Look, Garcia Twins, I know their future. It's bad reality TV shows and trying to figure out ways to milk that cow.
No, they're going to be kind of on the downward trajectory here for the next 10 years doing reality TV shows of depreciating quality.
Being a celebrity judge on something. Yeah.
Right. Right. Maybe one of them tries acting at some point. Probably the former Nikki.
Yeah, I think they have already.
Yeah.
I think it didn't go well. I think they came out here for a couple of pilot seasons and it didn't work.
Yeah. So,
but it's a tough business. So, I mean, I don't fault them. I don't say it's their fault for that.
No, I just like the act doesn't really have anywhere to go. It really was.
Right.
It was a younger person's act. They would have to kind of seriously sort of like rebrand what the Garcia twins are. In professional wrestling, and I don't think they're looking to be in ring anymore. So
Trinity, I don't know, because Trinity belonged naturally in the Bloodline story, to be honest with you. And while she's a good wrestler, she is how do I put this? She's like a system quarterback.
Yeah, she's a WWE.
She is a WWE wrestler. That's the best. It's the best way I could put it, and it's, there's nothing wrong with that. It's
but
just
it might be
you,
a little late for her to like retool.
Yes, that what there you go.
Her style is
there. You go. That's what I was trying to get at. It might, you know, it's like Cody could take the WWE style and go elsewhere, but put some new twists and spins on it. He was young enough. He was involved in the industry enough outside of it. He had enough friends who could help him with all that. Trinity, yeah, has been kind of, you know, raised in the system for the most part.
Yeah. Cody was raised with like understanding of pro wrestling.
Yes.
Like, much
yes.
deeper level.
This is an apples and
no, no. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm trying to, think of like, yeah, no, but it's a good pick though, just because I think it's illustrative of like, okay, there are these other things in Cody's background or whatever that allow him to have a broader perspective, but it does not typically go well for the I'm just a product of WWE. I've those guys kind of struggle to find their footing.
Yeah.
In the second chapter. I mean, I'm looking at a guy like Big Bill Morrissey. Still doesn't seem to have found what he's trying to do here. Yeah,
I think he's doing good work though. I mean, when you see him on the darks or you see him on the occasional Dynamite, he's a big guy, so he's always going to be limited in some capacity, but he at least has tried to adapt to being a non-WWE wrestler. I think he's done his run and Impact is underrated in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't really been given a lot of an opportunity to sort of shine personality wise but the thing he always had going for him was that he had a personality.
Yeah.
The one thing that WWE actually did a nice job teasing out of him.
Well, it's funny because I mentioned this, you know, I was tweeting randomly because I'm watching Freebirds and I'm up to their run in UWF, Latter-day Mid-South. And look, Ted DiBiase was a fantastic wrestler, in-ring, big guy. But he wasn't a personality machine at all as a babyface. And was only slightly better as a heel in the Rat Pack in Mid-South. And then he got to WWF. And they gave him this Million Dollar Man character. And he all of a sudden became the most charismatic dude in wrestling. It's a revelation, Chris. It really is. And everybody thinks of him as this great charismatic heel. But remember, he wasn't much as a manager either. So it's one of those things where sometimes that WWF sizzle over steak thing works for some people. And I think it worked a lot for Cass / Big Bill.
Yeah. And I think that there are a number of people who come out of the WWE system and have spent most of their career there. And never really had any time before they went to the WWE system doing indies in any considerable way or any sort of meaningful run. I just think that the transition out, you don't, what you learn in WWE is how to be a WWE performer.
Yes.
It leaves you.
You don't learn to be a wrestler. You learn to be do the school plays that WWE asks you to do.
And that might be more true now than even 10 years ago.
I would agree because their PC is teaching this now as a style, as opposed to bringing in wrestlers who have to adapt to that style.
Well, in NXT, their match style has gotten further away from the indie style and is much more I mean, this is our frustration with new NXT, even after they sort of move away from the Technicolor vomit. New NXT still very much just reeks of WWE match style, whereas old NXT was sort of like a hybridization of what was going on in modern indie wrestling at that time and also the WWE style.
And just as a intro to our Lazy River, I will say this. As much as I have insulted old Jim Ross, young, excited Jim Ross, really trying to get over the match, is the best. I mean, even pre-WWE Jim Ross. He is so great when he is motivated as a young man. I'm listening to a Terry Gordy versus Steve Dr. Death Williams fight, and he is, dude, you can just tell he's standing up in his seat screaming for Williams to win that match. I was like, man, I've been way too tough on him. And then I go, nah, maybe not.
No, if anything, whenever I hear young Jim Ross, it makes me feel more validated in how critical I am being of this iteration of Jim Ross, because what Jim Ross was in AEW was generally quite poor.
Yeah.
Even on its best nights, it wasn't, I mean, he was never delivering 1990s quality Jim Ross or anything.
Yeah. And you know, for me, his peak in at least WCW time was that first clash with him and Schiavone on the call. And it was just a fantastic sports call by both of them. I highly recommend that if you have not watched the first Clash of Champions.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Go watch that with those two on the call. They are fantastic on that. But that leads us into the Lazy River. We're going to start with AEW Dynamite, because that's the only thing that's not being previewed this weekend. But AEW on TBS, 833,000 viewers, 0.28 in the demo, number 4 in cable originals in 18 to 49. Interesting little side note from our friends at WrestleNomics, our friend Brandon Thurston. The final quarter hour featuring the Adam Cole match lost viewers, which is unusual because this is the first time that Adam Cole had wrestled in like 278 days. But news and notes from Dynamite. I, of course, do a show, the Dynamite show over on Fight Game Media, patreon.com/fightgamemedia. So I have thoroughly deconstructed the show already. Chris, I want to give you first crack at any thoughts you had on the.
Yeah,
on
absolutely. Let's start with the Adam Cole thing, right? Okay. And I think the ratings are really interesting to cross-reference against that segment, because I felt like that segment was a bit of a dud. And probably not a huge surprise to anyone who's ever heard me do commentary on anything Chris Jericho related, but I thought it was a bit of a dud. And I don't know that this push to like make Adam Cole the new Cody Rhodes for AEW is gonna work. I don't know that he works as this endearing babyface type. And that him and Britt work as this like power couple.
As the power couple. Yeah. And I understood why they put that on last to lead into the debut of the backstage show. But I think the fatal flaw in last night's Dynamite was, I think you needed to switch the Kenny match with Jeff Cobb and the BCC beatdown afterwards. Put that as the main event of the second hour, and you put the Cole match as the main event of the first hour. I think if you had reversed those, because really the story coming out for me of this Dynamite, and I really liked this Dynamite a lot. I thought there was a lot of good storytelling in it, which is what I watch wrestling for promos and fake fights and the heat. And I think now AEW has their main event heel group, their horsemen in the Blackpool Combat Club after the Bryan Danielson angle. And it's weird because I made this point last night on Twitter as well when I was watching it live, and I was thinking about it. It's not quite a one-to-one comparison with the original Horseman, but it's very, very close. You have Bryan Danielson, who is as the charismatic front man. And when he's a heel, he is charismatic as hell as a front man, because he has that wicked troublemaker sensibility in him, where he wants to eat the crowd a bit. I view Moxley as very much like a Tully Blanchard in this sense. Tully and Flair in 84 were feuding. Until they switched off Tully with Blackjack Mulligan, Flair and Blackjack, and then it was Flair and Wahoo and Blackjack and Tully, and it was originally Tully and Flair. And then they were randomly putting him in tag teams with the Andersons for six mans before the Horsemen. But like 6 months earlier, those two had been fighting. And so there's always that weird tension for anybody who watched for a while of, is Tully going to eventually turn on Flair because Flair and the Andersons are related, quote unquote, in kayfabe. You have Claudio as the perfect Ole Anderson grizzled vet who can stretch and hurt you. And then you have Yuta, who is, look, I have been tough on Wheeler Yuta here. I have dragged Wheeler Yuta for his acting abilities because they weren't very good. Him as a sneaky baby crap heel, it's fantastic. He is the perfect Arn Anderson coming into NWA as a 24-year-old baby bull, or whatever, however old he was. I think it was around 24 when he joined the Horsemen, even though he looked 40 all the time. I love this Blackpool Combat Club. I hope they are just guys who beat people up, which is what I want in a main event heel group. This is what the Pinnacle should have been. So overall, I love this show, but I would have switched those two, to get back to my point, I would have switched those two segments. I would have made the Cole thing head of hour one and the Blackpool Combat Club angle hour two.
Yeah, and I think that's the right move. And I bet you that was the original thought, and then it was
pitched. We need a lead-in.
We need a lead-in. But like, when you really think about it, has Chris Jericho been presented over the last 9 to 12 months as anything close to a main event level talent?
Boy, isn't it interesting that Chris Jericho once again puts over a young talent?
Yeah, he just...
The guy who ends up better is Chris Jericho moving up the card to face Adam Cole, and... you can almost hear the exasperation in Ricky Starks' voice in his promos. Like, what the hell is going on here?
How did I end up moving up / down to Juice Robinson?
To Juice Robinson. And nothing against Juice. I like him. He's wacky. But this? This is a cool down feud for Ricky Starks.
And it's crazy because Starks to me is... a fantastic foil, for example, for MJF.
Yes.
This is a guy who should be getting elevated up into that four pillars picture, I would argue.
Or at least teasing it. Speaking of the pillars, I really like the MJF Jungle Boy. Once Jungle Boy got out of the, yeah, when I got backstage, you're going to be my friend. When he got emotional and could get the what's to stop, because... wrestling fans are still stupid and are still wanting people when they do the WWE style three-word cadence, not realizing that it's because they are in a live arena where sound reverbs. But Jungle Boy needs to change his gear, but I really liked this setup. And I actually liked, because again, we complain about breaking the fourth wall, but MJF brought in Anna Jay as Jungle Boy's girlfriend, brought that up on television. But I like it because it gives Anna Jay the chance to turn face, break away from both the JAS, and also join the originals, possibly, in that feud, but also as a nice counterpoint to Tay and Sammy now, too. I think that's the smart move to make here.
That is interesting. Like, I guess you could eventually spin off Anna Jay and Jungle Boy against Sammy and Tay.
Yeah, I think that's the plan here with the pillars, and as they're, because yeah. I think they're going for a four-way at Double or Nothing.
They're going for a four-way at Double or Nothing, but then maybe you, like, okay, so then I guess that would sort of do away with all of the pillars in a way. So then MJF would go on to another feud after that.
Well, I think he escapes the pillars somehow. Oh, yeah. He doesn't beat any of them, but he escapes them. And none of them lose up until Memorial Day.
I think the way this has to end then is like he pins Darby Allin
Yes.
And Jungle Boy and Sammy kind of are like starting to feud.
Yeah. I'm fine with that. I'd keep them away from each other until then. I'd just have them beat everybody else in the company, pretty much. Because you have plenty of guys on the roster. You don't need to have Sammy. You don't need to have any of these pillars have a match until you might be able to have a tag match. A tag match would be fine. You know, Sammy and Max versus you do the WWE booking. But yeah, I'd keep them all away.
The Blackpool Combat Club going like heel and having Danielson join up with them at the end of this, I don't know. Like, part of me likes it. And then part of me also goes, cool, you guys really didn't think about what the ending of the MJF Bryan Danielson storyline is.
Dude, it's burning money is what it is. It's like, because the biggest
didn't think about it at all. Cool.
Yeah. The biggest baby face in that company could be Bryan Danielson.
Yeah.
And that's what I was thinking. I mean, my original idea last week was Takeshita joins the Blackpool Combat Club thinking that that's what Danielson wants from him. But he's still, you know, he's still the probie getting beat up by these other heels. And then eventually Danielson comes in and says, no, these guys are jerks. What are you doing? And then Takeshita has to make a decision. But it's obvious to me that Bryan Danielson does not want to be the face of AEW. He just wants to be a wrestler who does wrestling things. And he wants the younger guys to get elevated because, you know, that's the politics of wrestling today is thinking that, you know, all the old guys always held people down, et cetera, et cetera. But to me, it's like, Bryan Danielson was always after Punk, who God knows what's going on there. The chance to grow this company, I thought, was Bryan Danielson, period. Other than MJF as a heel champion, but as a baby face, the only real huge baby face champ I think they have that has charisma that could carry the company and can cut promos is Bryan Danielson.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole idea that, like, MJF keeps saying to Danielson, you're washed up, you can't do this, you know, you're past your prime, was, like, 11 years ago or whatever, like, that actually does, I mean, especially, like, you know, I think it actually does kind of port nicely onto, like, a Danielson underdog babyface. It's a different sort of underdog, you know? I mean,
yeah.
you can't say, oh, this guy can't win the big one. He has. Now it's, you know, is he over the hill? Is it too late? And
even so as that, I mean, people love that story. People love the over the hill gunfighter story.
Yeah. And okay. So like, while I enjoyed this episode more because it did do more storytelling for me, like this Blackpool Combat Club full turn or whatever is not narratively satisfying storytelling. Okay. So it's like a little bit of a mixed bag. I don't hate it. I'm definitely not at they're the horsemen because they don't have the belts. They have none belts.
They have all those Ring of Honor belts though, Chris.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. And low, who could forget about those? But supposing, I mean, you want me to take the Ring of Honor belt seriously? Okay.
The pure title and the Ring of Honor?
I know. Isn't one of them like a TV champion or something over on Ring of Honor?
No, that's Joe. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Shit. My bad.
No, Yuta is the pure champion. And Claudio, Claudio is the actual Ring of Honor champion.
Oh, good for him.
I think.
Because
Kingston's fighting him. Yeah.
No, that's right. He is on the pay-per-view, but still, it's like, you know, they need titles on their own brand, on their own show to be the horsemen. Like, if you're going to really make Blackpool Combat Club a serious threat, they need to get the tag titles really quickly. Like, they need to beat, and they need to, you know, beat sort of House of Black or whatever. They need to beat them. They're the champs right now, right?
The Trios champs, yes.
Yeah, they need to beat them in short order. Like what should happen is that they, like, completely trounced the House of Black to really.
I like that they trounced Dalton Castle and the boys.
I thought that was fine too. I did read like some reviews complaining about that. And I was just like, really? Like,
well, it's because Dalton Castle is a very, very good wrestler in terms of grappling, in terms of amateur wrestling, and they were hoping to see that against the Blackpool Combat Club. But the thing is, you take him out and you beat up his geek boys, and that's good. I like that.
Right. Yeah. And like, yeah, the the trios team of Dalton and the boys is not like about the grappling, right? Like no. When they do their trios matches, it's a lot more about like high flying and like sort of set pieces and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's great. But no, I mean, you weren't going to get grappling Dalton Castle anyways. And I dig him. I'd like, for example, I'd like to see like Dalton Castle versus Danielson. That'd be a fun, you know, enhancement match for Danielson. But that would be a grappling match. All the Dalton and the boys matches, they've always been entertaining, high flying, that sort of thing. More about the boys than about Dalton.
Two more quick hits and then I'll be done with Dynamite. We can go into our previews. Don Callis holding out his hand while Paige gets beat up. Ridiculous stupidity, and I loved it. And
I didn't think the Don Callis follow-up largely with Kenny was very narratively satisfying.
It wasn't narratively satisfying.
No, but that was actually pretty weak.
But the whole geek thing of him just standing there with his hand out, it's like, you moron. And I'll plug a match. I don't regularly watch Ring of Honor, but I borrowed a login, admittedly, because I will not subscribe to it. I watched Athena and Emi Sakura from tonight's Ring of Honor show to set up the Yuka Sakazaki Athena match tomorrow night. That is a hoss fight. Athena and Emi beat the crap out of each other, and it was fan friggin' tastic. Go out of your way to watch it. I loved that match. Anything else about Dynamite before we go into NXT?
Let me see. I feel like Omega.
Jeff Cobb was good. It was good.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to see if there's anything else. We basically covered all the segments, I feel as though, right?
Yeah. We don't need to cover
it. You're right. Like the Outcast is still a thing and it's still not good. no, like that Willow Nightingale match was an effing mess. Like it was way overbooked.
The problem with that was the post-match too. It's like, okay, you have Rio. She comes out in a white t-shirt. It's a perfect canvas for green paint. And then Jamie Hayter comes out like a whirling dervish. The three heels are absolute geeks because they go at her one at a time. So they get taken out.
The baby faces kind of do that too. Like they come out one at a time.
Yeah, well, but I mean, they attacked her one at a time when they were all like ganging up at first against everybody else. It was just dumb heel them. And that happens sometimes for a good pop for the babyface champ. But then she extends her hand to Riho. And the first thing Riho does is make the belt thing. It's like, you ungrateful woman. If I were Hayter, I would have knocked her the F out. Because it's like, you know, oh, look, I'm going after your title next. It's like, I just helped you from a beating and not getting paint. And the first thing you're going to do is mock me? I ought to kick your ass, Riho.
The other thing that, like, cracked me up was, like, how bad the cheating was in this match.
Yeah, it was. Oh, this was very sports entertainment.
No, it was worse because like Aubrey, for her part, was often putting herself in visual eyeline of the cheating.
Oh yes, that
like beggared belief. My favorite one was when she actually expressed a reaction to seeing the cheating.
Did she crack a smile? What? My
no,
God.
No. She looked like this, like, oh, you're like making a face. Oh, you can't do that. That's cheating. Only if you see that, and you're the referee.
You're supposed to do something. That's your job.
And it would have been perfectly fine. Here's the worst part, right? Like, this is actually a wonderful match to establish Aubrey Edwards' credibility as a referee to a certain extent, where there Willow's having this match against Ruby and the other two members of the Outcast are cheating, and at first she's not catching it, and then finally Aubrey catches it. She throws out the match, awards it to Willow Nightingale. Willow gets a DQ win over Ruby Soho. No harm, no foul. It's not as though like Ruby's brand is damaged by this in the slightest. And then they can jump right to this, but then you protect Aubrey's credibility. Instead, like you have this situation where Aubrey is seeing rampant amounts of cheating, but is not empowered to toss the match.
Right.
Also, mildly intrigued by the potential of a cheating Orange Cassidy. Like, am I into heel Orange Cassidy or cheating Orange Cassidy? Maybe.
Maybe.
Oh, the acclaimed. Oh, speaking of Jericho, he found another young act to attach himself to.
Really liked that vignette. I did, but I think the problem was they tried to do the hard sell later, but it reminded me a lot of the Public Enemy one where it was, "Thank you, Mr. Dangerously." They were charging everything to Paul E. Dangerously's credit card. And just doing things. That's what I was expecting out of this, where it's like, yeah, Chris Jericho is funding this for the night. But 2.0's antics are fun.
Still Jericho finding a way to be professional Dracula, sucking the young life out of talent.
I'm waiting for the Vikingo feud. I'll help put him over.
And Commander too. Like, I'm just like thinking of and Bandito. Yeah, like I could, yes.
Luchador Chris Jericho.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna help all these. They can't speak very well on the mic. I'll help put them over.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God, he'll be work rate Triple H. Moving on, NXT Stand and Deliver from Crypto.com Arena, 1 p.m. Yes. Eastern. Local time, 10 a.m. here in L.A. Oh, it's going to be sparse, methinks. But it is NXT. It's young kids. There's at least one match on here that I think is going to absolutely kill. But let's get into this. So starting with Chase University, Andre Chase, Duke Hudson, and my favorite character in NXT, Thea Hale, who is just always on a 10 at all times, no matter what she's doing. And Tyler Bate versus Schism, Joe Gacy, Jagger Reed, Rip Fowler, and Ava. In an 8-person mixed tag match, the winners will gain control of Chase University. Oh, the drama. Chris, who do you got?
I think Chase University loses this. I think that this is like the beginning of building the schism, because it is kind of time to kick the tires on what is the schism. What are we doing with these guys going forward?
The most easy answer is that Duke Hudson, of course, turns on Chase University, giving it to the schism, or at least Duke Hudson has made a deal with the schism to then pay off the quote unquote Kiana James wants to buy Chase University and he's the mole. Type thing, which is where they were originally going to go, I think, at first. But I am so here also for Duke Hudson finally buying in to Chase U and being fiery babyface Duke Hudson, because I've never really been interested in him as a heel. He stinks as a heel, to be honest.
There's something kind of fun about him as like a dopey but somewhat capable babyface. Like,
yes.
Like he like thinks he's suave and he thinks he's a superhero
and he thinks he's a good gambler.
I think you can still keep some of the heel attributes, like the slight delusion, but like it's done in a charming way. Like he thinks he's the hero, and in his mind, like, he's the hero of his own story. And I think that can actually be presented in a fun mid-card babyface sort of way.
I want to see his babyface fire, because I've never seen it, and I think it'd be kind of interesting.
And that might actually be the swerve here. The swerve is that Hudson buys completely in, but they still lose anyways.
Yeah, I got Schism doing this, and God, The Rock's daughter has none of his charisma.
No, absolutely, she's got none of it, but you know, I think where they're going to go is Thea Hale's going to eat the pin here, because The Rock's daughter is going to like mind kaboosh her.
Yes,
head.
And she's gonna do something wacky. And
yes,
I love her to death, though. She's just committed. She's the most committed actress I've ever seen in wrestling, I think.
No, that's absolutely where they're gonna go. They're gonna like have her, you know, the mind kaboosh is put on her head and she can't think straight and she gets pinned.
Triple threat tag team match for the NXT tag team titles. For some reason, Pretty Deadly not on this card. I think they're hosting. But it's Gallus, your champions, Mark Coffey and Wolfgang, versus the Creed brothers, Brutus and Julius, versus the D'Angelo family, Tony D'Angelo and Channing Stacks Lorenzo.
Well, how many more times can you beat Pretty Deadly?
Yeah, that's true. I think this match is going to be fun. I don't know if it'll be good, but it'll be fun for me at least, because it looks like a lot of hoss fighting going on. And of course, Stax doing crazy crap from the top of the rope. But I have Gallus keeping the titles here.
I have Gallus keeping the titles here, but Tony and Stax continue to be a pretty entertaining little team.
Yeah, right? I agree. they're inept mobsters is their gimmick.
Like, no, they're like, they're LARPing being monsters. It's great. Like,
what I want, you know what I want from this act? I want them to try and do like a shakedown of a business for protection money and end up paying the business. That's what I want.
They pay the business to retain them as the protection.
Yes. Well, we're just trying to get up and running here. Can we pay you $20 a week? Sure.
We need to be protecting a few places kind of before we can start getting around, you know, and then they start paying us. You know, you got to spend money to make money.
For the women's tag team titles, Fallon Henley and Kiana James with Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen. Congratulations on getting to first base versus, oh God, Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. Who just did the most ridiculous vignette I've seen?
I thought it was beautiful, Jeff.
You are the Isla Dawn fan.
I am. You know what? After all these,
you bought in.
I bought in. No,
you were the Duke Hudson of Isla Dawn fandom.
it took several years here, Jeff, but I have finally completely bought in after this week's Blood Sisters promo. I mean, the metaphor. Did you see the metaphor? They used a little red scarfy thing and they wrapped it around their arms.
Yes, I caught the symbolism.
Like, yeah, like it's like blood.
It's like the Brendan Fraser, the whale movie, and it has to go into Moby Dick. We're going a little bit too on the nose there, kids.
It's like blood.
I think this match is gonna stink. But I think Kiana James is just such a power. She is underrated in terms of how muscular she is. And she's gonna throw some people around.
No, even when she wears certain outfits, you still see her physique. You
know? Oh, yeah. She is a crap house. I mean,
she's got some serious shoulders and like serious arms. Yeah, like that.
And she was throwing people in that other match, that five-way cage time pin thing that they did. So I mean,
I'll go this far. I'm more interested in seeing longer term what Kiana James can do than I am Tiffany Stratton.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I'm here for that. I can see that case. Johnny Gargano versus Grayson Waller in an unsanctioned match.
Oh, real quickly. I think the Fallon Henley Kiana James team loses to the Blitz.
Yes, I think they give up the titles here.
Yep. Yeah.
And that we get the split, and then Brooks and Josh start fighting, but it's a cliffhanger. Or because we don't know who Sebastian is yet, I think it's Duke Hudson, but we don't know who he is yet. So who knows? Yeah, no, I have them dropping the titles here. I think it was a nice test run for them. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Gargano and Waller. Boy, if I'm Johnny Gargano, I'm thankful they're paying me a lot on the main roster and getting main roster money, because once again, we're getting the short jokes and the nerd jokes on Raw. And he comes down and he gets his ass beat by Grayson Waller. I don't know how you can have Grayson Waller win this. But I don't see why you would bring a veteran down to not put over the young guy either.
And I also don't think Grayson Waller can keep eating losses. This is supposed to be a rebuild cycle.
Yes.
Very much should be on the rebuild. This should be a feud that he is, you know, kind of firmly in control of. Gargano's such a strange pick on this. I don't know that Waller beating Gargano does a ton for Waller in terms of formidability. I think really what Grayson Waller needs to be doing, right, is killing giants and sort of like establishing himself as like, I can kill giants, but you know, like taking down like big dudes.
Pretty good Aussie from you.
Thank you. No, but like where Waller would really get benefit, I'm not saying they should do it with Lashley, but like the type, the Lashley type characters, you know, like those guys from the main roster.
Yeah, I got Waller winning this. Probably by cheating or
right. Yeah.
Threatening Candace and the baby who are watching backstage or something like that. And Gargano has to valiantly do this. I think this match is going to be very good until then, but I think you're going to hear a lot of comments from fans who are like, well, Johnny Gargano only does one kind of match in NXT. He's really not that good, from AEW type fans. I think people are going to underplay how good Gargano is.
I think people are also going to not leave this match with a full impression of how good Waller is.
Exactly.
Waller's athletic. He's good on the microphone. He's a good character. He's a good character in the ring. He's just someone you love to hate.
Yes.
Yeah. And
he has that. He has the special gift.
He has it. It's good. I just really see it with this guy. And I would love to see what this guy would be able to do if, you know, he had some of the indie seasoning too. I think like there's actually a lot of potential in this guy.
I'm going to give you lead on the men's match, but I'm taking lead on the women's match. Ladder match for the NXT women's title. Roxanne Perez defending now that she's been cleared versus Zoe Stark, Gigi Dolin, Tiffany Stratton, Lyra Valkyra, and Indy Hartwell. Roxanne coming back in. Oh, the melodrama here about the issues that they've used to cover the other issues.
She has anxiety, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm going to say this. Roxanne Perez is the one. If WWE main roster gets a do-over with the Bayley character, you got Roxanne Perez right here. Pure babyface. This segment was horrible, but damn if Roxanne wasn't putting her heart into it. That's what I'm going to say about that. The problem here is now that you've brought her back with overcoming mental health issues, she has to win here. And this was the time really to belt Tiffany Stratton, in my opinion. But you can't do that now. Because otherwise, it becomes, well, Roxanne Perez's mental issues have gotten over on her. And the problem with that is you've now made one of your characters mentally ill. And I don't think you want a top babyface to do that. Now, some people will be saying, well, Jeff,
you go to the top of the ladder and have a panic attack.
Oh, my God. No,
I can't do it. I can't win the match.
And then Tiffany just decks her and takes the belt.
This is going to be how she's going to lose the belt.
Oh,
she came back too soon. That's
you're so right.
Yep.
And here's what certain fans are going to say. Well, Jeff, this is a perfect opportunity to teach people about compassion for mental health and emotional health. And I'm here to tell you, they don't do crap subtle in NXT or WWE, kids. You all should know that by now. And anybody who says that to me, I'm going to punch in the face. This is a good opportunity. And you can see the after school special wheels turning in people's head where it's going to be Roxanne Perez. You know, the doubts are there. Can she come back and overcome Tiffany Stratton, who stole her belt? Yet another Federation doing Rocky storylines after AEW. And just, who do you have here? Do you have her winning or do you have Stratton winning this?
I got Stratton winning.
Stratton winning this too. And I think it's the worst move they can make. So maybe not everybody will be happy after this. Everybody won't get what they want. But you'll get a couple of disappointments. This will be it.
Yeah, I just have a hard time seeing anyone else in this. And
yeah, I just...
the way they brought back Roxanne Perez very much felt like paving the road to a loss rather than paving a road to
yes. A victory. Yes, Papa HBK is worried about her now.
And let us talk for a moment about the high quality acting work from HBK.
Let me apologize to the Mysterio family for ever hating their acting ability, because this thing,
HB Shizzle, my man, bringing it. When he sinks his teeth into the material, you just really feel it from this guy.
Look, I'm here for the Emmy upfronts by WWE next year. I want to be in that room with the Television Critics Association.
Well, I mean, I guess I can answer who thought it was a good idea for Shawn Michaels to be like a narrative through line for large chunks of these episodes.
That would be Shawn Michaels, I believe.
That would be Shawn Michaels. No, I know the answer, but does anyone other than Shawn Michaels and maybe his friend Paul?
Do you think Shawn Michaels sits in his office all day and watches nothing but Shawn Michaels matches and promos and angles and goes, that's what I could use for this guy?
It feels like he's just been mining the glory days of 94, 95, 96, and 97. And that's what he's going for.
You know what? He's gonna bury somebody just out of nostalgia. It'll be great.
What I want you to do in this match is I want you to oversell a lot.
I now want a vignette where HBK comes into HBK's office and HBK buries somebody in front of HBK playing HBK Vince. That's what I want. Oh God. Well, you're gonna get this one. In the men's NXT North American Championship. And this match, I think, might be the best match of the weekend if everybody has their caffeine at 10 a.m. because I think it's opening the show. Wes Lee, your champion, taking on Dragon Lee, no relation, versus JD McDonagh versus Ilya Dragunov versus Axiom. No big guy to base here. Nothing but five small flippy-do guys, and I'm here for it, Chris. Who you got?
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Wesley wants to beat it. I think Wesley does pull it off. I don't think they're done with the Wesley, they're not done with the Wesley storyline yet, I don't think. So I'm going to say Wesley wins.
I don't think so. Boy, I think you should belt Dragon Lee.
I think you should. But I don't know that they're done with Wesley yet. I think I think that this could, if it was the main event, be the match of the weekend. But I think, having seen NXTs in years past where they'll put these multi-man things in the beginning, it'll be an extremely good 15 minutes.
You have the McDonough Dragunov feud that you still can go to.
Mm-hmm.
You have this weird Wesley Axiom storyline where Axiom's been protecting Wesley. Dragon Lee's the only one without a partner here. So, I mean, to me, the most narratively satisfying would be Dragon Lee, but I think you're right. I think Wesley takes this one.
Yeah, and Dragon Lee is going to look really good in this, but maybe we'll see, Axiom's character shift. Or, I don't know, in a feud with Dragon Lee, or maybe Dragon Lee will come in and be a heel.
And in the main event, in a terrible story, but they really killed it on the video package here, I thought. Braun Breaker, your NXT champion, versus Carmelo Hayes with Trick Williams.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. Especially if you think Perez is going to lose her title. I don't know. I think Breaker might retain here. I think Carmelo might be coming up to the main roster.
I think the same thing, and I think Breaker turns heel.
Interesting.
I think Breaker takes a shortcut to win.
Okay, so he yes, that we start the beginning of the Breaker heel turn, because
we have Trick Williams trying to interfere. He gets rid of him, but he throws a chair in there, but then Breaker uses the chair on Carmelo or something.
Yeah, and this could be a really fun sort of double tourney sort of match too, where Melo's working sort of as the underdog.
And that's dangerous.
This could actually be a really fun match.
It's going to be a fun match,
I think. Right. I mean,
the story is going to bog it down is the problem.
I don't know. If they execute the story well, I mean, I think that this is fairly natural. The crowd's going to be there with them on this. The crowd likes Melo. The crowd has been sort of turning against Breaker anyways. And, like, you're right. That is the story they've been sort of telling here. If they lean into that, wrestle into that, and they're given, like, 25, 30 minutes, especially if you get rid of Trick early. Get Trick out of the picture early so that, like, Melo gets 10 minutes to really sort of settle into the underdog baby facey sort of role. And it starts really pissing off Breaker. But you got to make sure that the rejection of the fandom bothers Breaker, and that's a key pivotal point in the match. That he, like, looks at the crowd and realizes they're not with me. They hate me. They want Carmelo to win, and it doesn't even matter to them. Like it doesn't matter that this guy is, you know, whatever.
And then we get the "you people" promo on Tuesday. You fans, each and every one of you.
I think, okay, they'll go too ham-handed on that. But I think a fun transitional promo here is where Breaker just starts viewing the fans as doubters. So, okay. Yeah, like, initially, it's not that he fully hates them yet. It's just, like, he's trying to be like, I'm staying positive against all the doubters out there.
A Kurt Angle type thing?
Yeah, they won't, though. They'll go right to you people. But
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, there's a nice actual off-rampy sort of thing there. It could be really interesting if they afterwards turn, like, the Creeds and have the Creeds and Breaker all be heels.
Like, dude, I want the Varsity Club.
I am very here for those three guys as, like, a dominant heel faction in NXT starting.
And hell, give them Gable Stevenson's brother back. All four of them.
Nothing would be better than when David Kemp shows up and goes, I thought you guys sucked, but now that I've seen what you guys do, you guys are actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'm gonna ride with you again.
I'm in again.
You guys don't suck as much as I thought you did.
Maybe Roderick Strong comes back and leads him again or something.
But I'm definitely here for just any more Damon Kemp and Creed's interactions. That was one of the better segments on this show in the last year.
All right, let's get to the two nights of Mania. Night one, starting off, Austin Theory, your United States champion, opening the show against John Cena. Here's my theory, Chris. If Vince isn't doing the Welcome to WrestleMania, this is almost a glorified squash of Theory so that they can figure out something else to do with him in creative, even though they won't. And then John Cena goes, hope you enjoyed the match. Welcome to WrestleMania. And yeah. We're off.
No, I mean, this could realistically be a 3-second Theory loses match. Like, they try to set the new WrestleMania record for the shortest.
Yes. Time. Well, yeah, the SD Jones or Daniel Bryan loss. Yeah. Everything logical says Austin Theory wins this. And I kind of liked his promo too. The empty arena promo I thought was pretty good. They wanted to avoid the what's for him, and that was a smart move. But they do love their moments. And John Cena is such a mainstream celebrity. And they love clout chasing.
They haven't built Austin Theory enough to see a picture for what the next level beyond beating John Cena is. At this point, this sounds weird, but Austin Theory is so low in the card that beating John Cena means nothing for him.
Yeah, this is Fandango beating Chris Jericho.
Right, or even back in the day, like, if Fandango had somehow beaten John Cena, that still wouldn't have made Fandango.
No, he'd still be the dancing geek.
Yeah.
No, I agree. What match next? Let's go to this one, because this is a fun one. Rey Mysterio versus Dominic Mysterio. Whew. You know, the veteran knowledge is that Ray looks up at the lights for his kid to help make him. But again, WWE loves their moments. I think Ray beats Dominic here. or Dominic just cheats so ham-handedly that he didn't really win, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Dominic cheats in such an offensive way that it doesn't really put Dominic over per se, but like he beats Mysterio with the help of, let's say, maybe Rhea.
Yeah. Although, see, Rhea's in the main event. So I don't think Rhea can help. Maybe Damian Priest.
Yeah, but like the judgment, one of the Judgment Day, I think helps.
Yeah.
Helps him win. Or maybe it's he loses because there is no Rhea. And maybe that is that's the storyline.
Okay. We can go with that. Yeah,
I don't
sure.
I don't know. I mean, he should beat Rey. He should.
Yes.
Like,
and Rey should be going, I want to lose this match to help my son's career. But WWE would probably push back against that. You know what? Screw it. I'm going to switch. I'm going to say Dominic Mysterio wins this.
I'm going to say it too. I'm there.
I'm
going to say Dominic wins.
I have talked myself into my own bad idea. But yes, let's go with that. In a showcase match, a fatal four-way tag match, Braun Strowman and Ricochet versus the Street Profits of Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford versus the Alpha Academy of Chad Gable and Otis versus the Viking Raiders, Eric and Ivar with Valhalla. What a dumb name for her. Look, eight guys who can go on this match. I think it's going to be fun sprint, but there's not going to be much to it. I think Braun and Ricochet win it. I think Otis turns on Gable and joins the model crew because they're looking to make fun of the fat guy. He's the new Chris Farley again. Yeah, who you got?
I'm going to say the Viking Raiders.
Okay.
Yeah, I think like they need to do something with this act, and so if it was Ricochet and Braun, that wouldn't surprise me either. Like that act has been working, but like,
and the Street Profits wouldn't shock me either.
Yeah, I know. I
just like to have fun.
I feel like they haven't really, you know, pushed, you know, done the tread on the tires on the Raiders yet.
Six-woman tag, Trish Stratus, Lita, and Becky Lynch versus Damage Control of Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Sky. Dakota Kai and Io Sky finally getting a Mania payoff, despite the fact that this story has stunk. Who you got, Chris?
I'm going to say Damage Control wins this because Trish turns on her team.
Yeah, that... Man, But I don't trust WWE again, and I know Vince is back, but he's not really in creative, but the instincts are strong here. And my thought is Trish, Lita, and Becky win to give the moment, and then Trish turns on Becky on Monday, which I think does nothing, really, for this. But I want Damage Control to win. I think they need the win. I think they need to do something with this stable or break them up. But I think the baby faces and the legends.
Like, in my mind, it's just kind of like a classic bad booking move to have a team that is going to break up the next night get a win.
Yes, like, but that's WWE in a nutshell.
Though. I know. But, like, you know, when we're complaining about, like, incoherent or illogical bookings, like, this is a textbook bad booking move, in my opinion.
Seth freaking Rollins versus Logan Paul.
Ooh. Wow. Does he beat Logan? I don't think he does. I think Logan goes over here. This is a tough one.
I am hyped for this match, Chris.
I am hyped for this match, too.
I am hyped for this. Logan Paul is a despicable human being, but I'm here for this match.
I know. Speaking of people we should never cheer for, really endorse, period. Like, Logan Paul's pretty up there.
Here's something. I'm going to agree with you, and I am going to say that he goes into a program with Cena for the U.S. title at Saudi Arabia.
Oh, Logan Paul versus Cena?
Yes.
Ooh. I mean, that's Look, I mean, that's intriguing.
I think they have a Saudi show coming up in May, I want to say. Don't quote me on that. But that's where I'm going with. I think Logan Paul and Cena is the move because it's two celebrities fighting it out. And WWE would love that.
I agree. Oh, I think Logan Paul wins this.
Oh, Jeff. I didn't realize you're taking a hit of anything.
You know, I still managed to remain professional.
In the not main event of night one, but the most anticipated match of night one, the Usos of Jay and Jimmy, your champions, your undisputed WWE tag team champs, take on Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn.
I think the Usos lose here. I think Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn win. Just
the pop that this match is going to get.
No, I mean, beyond that, though, like the ratings that Sami and Kevin have been driving in Canada over the last few months have been quite stunning.
Yes.
It's just baffling to me that the WWE is not realizing what an asset these two guys to the story have been. That it's been Roman and the Usos, and the bloodline's been great, but like they had the exact right sympathetic protagonist characters in Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens the last few years here.
And they're gonna stick the landing. This has been 2 years in the making, and they're gonna stick the landing on the bloodline. I hope
this just should have been the close of night one.
I mean, agree. It will
night
not...
one is Kevin and Sami crying, yes. Hugging, saying I'm sorry, and holding up the titles.
Yes, I agree. I wholeheartedly agree, but they have that dumb stipulation at the Rumble. And so, your main event for night one probably is Charlotte Flair against Rhea Ripley. Rhea's going over, and Rhea's going to be the babyface in that match.
Yeah, I think this Charlotte promo, the crowd's going to force the turn on Charlotte.
Yes. Yes. Because I mean that promo she did Friday night where you could see she got rattled when they were wanting her. And she was trying to be wholesome and likable and hey guys, you know, I've tried so hard and yeah, my dad, blah blah. Are you really wanting me? You could tell she was rattled, and that crowd saw blood in the water and they were swimming like sharks around her.
And you know what? We knew this was going to happen from the second they started this angle. What? Whether or not WWE wanted that or not, like, it was a giant burning inevitability that the crowd was going to turn on the Charlotte as babyface premise.
And you know what? They're going to try and milk the heat, because I think at the end of the night here, I think Dominic helps Rhea win this match. And they become the new power couple. That's your closing image of night one of WrestleMania is Dominic and Rio and not Kevin and Sammy, which is ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. As much as we like Dominic and Rhea, it is a dead end street to focus on them as the power couple.
I agree.
The way that they've been booking the women's division, like, because the whole thing with Dominic and Rhea, right, is that, like, the folk, Rhea's the capable one and Dominic's the boob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, you gotta have Rhea lifting up Dominic on her shoulder like Elizabeth.
No, it'd be great. Is Dominic keeps trying to lift up Rhea like two or three times, can't do it.
And then they switch.
Yeah, she just, like, stops him and then she lifts him up.
Yes. I'm here for this. I'm here for this stupidity. Oh man, that is so great. Night two. Let's get this one out of the way. Brock Lesnar versus Omos with MVP.
Gonna be a classic. I bet you it goes about 20 minutes.
Six and... stars, seven if it's in the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah. It's like it's gonna be everything you want it to be and more. A lot of things that you've been missing in wrestling over the
Penny
last
who? Omos, mother.
Yeah. Like, And I mean, I think Omos is going to turn in a performance that you won't be able to forget.
Okay, but it's still kind of a question: who wins?
The fans.
I think Brock goes over. There's no way he loses Omos.
Brock's going over. I think. Okay, I think he'll like knock.
Brock may quit halfway through this match and just walk out.
Although I'm morbidly curious to watch what the F5 on Omos looks like.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Because I think that's going to look clunky as hell.
Yeah. I think you're going to get a lot of F5s on Cedric and Shelton just to make it look good.
Here's one. Over under on clunky botches, I'm going to give you 2. Is it more than 2 or less than 2?
Like, oh, that's way over. I'm taking at least 7.
Yeah, okay. So do we arrive at the Lashley Lesnar match where we get to the this isn't working for me, brother thing?
Yes, I think we do. I think he.
Okay, you think we're going to get to this isn't working for
me? I think Brock's going to get pissed halfway through this match. He's either going to leave or he's going to start throwing Omos with no regard for his safety.
I am here for the Bruiser Brody Lex Luger experience and Brock Lesnar.
Like, where Luger just leaves.
Yeah, because Brody just refuses to do anything.
Yes, okay. Showcase Fatal 4-Way Tag Match for the women. Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez versus Natty and Shotzi versus Ronda and Shayna versus Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville. Let's get the prop bets out of the way. Shotzi is doing a dive onto everybody.
Of course.
Raquel is going to get to showcase her strength. Do Ronda and Shayna actually go over? Or do they give it to Liv and Raquel?
I think I'm going to say Ronda and Shayna go over.
I think it's going to be Liv and Raquel.
Okay.
I think it's... I don't know, man. I think it's just one of those things where I think Raquel is going to be, this is the first incarnation of Braun. And I think they're going to start pushing her after this as a singles person again. So I think Liv and Raquel get the big win here.
Okay.
In a Hell in a Cell match, Edge versus the Demon, Finn Balor. That's Edge a story wins. Match waiting
yeah,
to happen.
It's a story match. Edge wins.
If this is Edge's last match, or if he's going away for a while, I think Finn Balor wins this, and the Demon gets his heat back after losing to. It was Roman Reigns that the Demon first lost to, and I think this is to get the mystique of the Demon character back a little, and to help that Judgment Night stable have a little bit more oomph to it. So I think the Demon wins this one.
They haven't really finished the best stuff, though, have they?
I think it's over. I think they're done with it.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe then.
And maybe. I think Edge knows that he's kind of overstayed his welcome a little bit. I think it's time for him to go away for a bit, even if it's to AEW with a run with Christian, or to come back with Christian and FTR and WWE. Whatever happens.
Boy, it really feels like the money is in those two guys together at this point. Christian honestly feels like the better singles of the two of them, but like I think just there's a lot more intrigue in Edge and Christian together than there
well, the
is.
Problem is the Hardy brothers problem, in that Christian is the Matt Hardy, and Edge is Jeff Hardy, the one that everybody really really wants to see, and they're kind of like, yeah, we'll take Christian in the package.
That's an interesting comp too. Well, okay. I mean, the difference is that both Edge and Christian can really talk, but like,
yes,
I feel that Christian's the better character worker of the two.
Yes, Edge loves his community theater.
Yeah, Edge only knows how to do stuff at like 10.
Yes. Yeah, Christian has much more subtlety to his snark, and I love it for him because I love subtle snark. In a hoss fight to end all hoss fights for the Intercontinental Championship, Gunther versus Sheamus versus Drew McIntyre. I'll let
you
know.
This is the match I'm actually like.
Oh, really, I am so stoked for this match.
Yeah, I know. It's gonna be good. Like, they're gonna
beat the crap out of each other.
I know. I know. This is going to be.
There are going to be chests that are welt filled.
Oh, those clubbing blows, dude! When Sheamus puts the 10 beats of the Baron on Gunther, it is going to be done with such aggression because Gunther has slapped both of their chests so many times. Like, the give and take here is going to be very generous.
Yes.
And I think, you know, even though it's fairly obvious that Gunther's going to retain here, it's going to be such a fun 12 minutes or whatever it ends up being. It's just going to be big dudes beating the crap out of each other.
Who you got winning?
I have Gunther retaining.
Interesting. I think there's a chance, because they have been playing up this story, that the Intercontinental title is the only title Sheamus has never won. Sheamus is getting up there in years. I think Sheamus wins this.
Interesting.
I think there's going to be a lot of happy endings on this card, and I think that's going to be one of them. I don't mind Gunther winning because he's a great champ, but I think they're going to give it to Sheamus.
Is he going to turn heel in the process? Is he going to pin Gunther, or is he going to pin Drew?
I think he's going to pin Drew, because the story was that Gunther was mad at Adam Pearce because he can lose his title without being pinned. So I think that's how they get around it. I think Drew's eating the pin here.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, maybe.
And then eventually they'll do a feud where Drew beats Sheamus or something like that to get the heat back, something to that effect. I don't know, but that's just my thought. I mean, either Gunther or Sheamus are going out of this the winner, I think. But my head leans Sheamus. For the WWE Raw Women's Championship, the champion Bianca Belair versus sexy PTA mom clown Asuka. In one of the worst told stories that I've ever seen out of a big build for a WrestleMania. Because all they did was have Asuka be Asuka, but with the weird creepy clown makeup and drooling. Who you got, Chris?
Asuka gonna win.
I think Asuka wins. And I think possibly there's a post-match misting with the great Muda.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, I was just like, I mean, I was really thinking about, is Asuka gonna win based on the quality of this build? But let's suppose the quality of the build means nothing. Yeah, I think you're right. I think Asuka wins.
Bianca should probably win based on the build, because Asuka's just being weird and dancing with the title and really doesn't bring a whole lot other than the creepy vibe to it. And Bianca's a star in their eyes. And I'm starting to talk myself into Bianca winning this, even though Muda probably comes out and misses at some point. And then Asuka missed her, and she still kicks out and wins blind. But I don't see who you put up against Bianca next, who you have in the, waiting in the wings as a big champ. Unless you're breaking up the EO, Dakota, Bailey crew and maybe pushing one of them. I think I might have just talked myself into Bianca winning this, even though I think Asuka is going to. Huh.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to say I am now seeing the Bianca argument.
I mean, Bianca's done nothing in this feud for the most part. She's the star. Right.
The question is really, how much credence narratively do you put, like, do you take from the build? Like, does the build feel like it's actually belying what's going to happen at Mania, or is it one of these builds where, okay, they did all that, but it doesn't actually matter?
Well, they're doing the worst build possible, where Asuka's done nothing, and what they say is, oh, she's playing games with Bianca's head. It's like, all right.
Does it? Yeah, right. Does it seem like there's like a post-Mania story for Asuka as heel champion?
I, you know what this might be? This might be Asuka wins the title at Mania and Bianca wins it back. Like,
no, okay, she wins it back the very next night.
Not the next night necessarily, but maybe the next pay-per-view.
Has Asuka gotten her big WrestleMania victory yet?
No, her streak was broken by Charlotte. That was right.
She's always eaten L's at WrestleMania, right?
You know what? I'm just going to say Asuka and say the hell.
I'm going to say Asuka. I think this is Asuka's, like, WrestleMania
time
win.
Time for her flowers.
Bianca, yeah, Bianca's had her WrestleMania win.
Yes. She's had two big ones. And she'll get the next big one against Rhea next year, I think. I think that's the move to make.
This might actually be the Asuka WrestleMania win, and they'll do it in the style of her as a heel.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And then finally, singles match for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. Roman Reigns with Paul Heyman versus Cody Rhodes. The underrated story here to me is that Cody Rhodes did, of course, leave AEW to come to WWE, and now they're going to crown him. I think. There is 15% chance in the back of my head, Chris, that they are just going to pivot to Jay versus Roman for the title and possibly beat Cody here with Solo, because Solo had his streak broken in Raw. I can't get there, though, but it's in my head that they then, like, possibly make Cody win at, like, Saudi Arabia to give them that moment, which would be stupid. It would be absolutely stupid. Don't get me wrong, kids. I think you have to belt Cody here. I think that's the move. That's the star-making thing. That's the new, quote-unquote, boom period, and we see what Cody has as a champion who can carry a company. And it's also a big F you to AEW. Don't think otherwise. Don't think.
The place he never wanted the belt at.
Well, the place he trapped himself into not getting the belt. He wanted the belt there.
Right. No, I know. But he can never
fell on his sword.
Yeah, he could say that he was doing that because
the
that's
honorable thing. I was doing the honorable thing with AEW. The
honorable thing, you know?
Yeah. Because, you know, Cody does love his own lore a little bit.
No, sure, right. That's like a perfect Cody story.
Yes. I got Cody winning here. And the fireworks go off and we get the moment.
Man, I would love, though, for this match to, like, end with some crazy heist of the century sort of angle where Roman sacrifices Jay to retain the title. Like, he betrays Jay, and that's what starts the Roman Jay storyline. That the way Roman wins is he makes it clear that, like, he'll even sell out his own flesh and blood. He'll do anything to hang on to this title.
Would it not be an even better story if he sells him out and loses?
No.
Okay. That's fair. I'm just thinking about it right now.
No, I think it's better if he sells him out and wins, because then Jay now gets that second bite at the apple of going after the title. It brings this story full circle from where it began a few years ago.
Narratively, it's the best story because Cody was just kind of shoehorned in here. But you can't do that, man.
I know that. I'm aware of that, but, like, I actually love the notion of this very, very strong, incredible baby face being built up as a real threat to Roman Reigns, where it feels like for the first time throughout this storyline, Roman's title's in real jeopardy of being lost. And his back.
And that's the win for Cody, is that he actually is a credible contender.
Yeah. That's what makes him, like, that's what makes him so, well, that's not the win for Cody, right? I mean, that is the win for this storyline. It feels more credible than when Drew was going for the belt against Roman.
Yeah, no, it does, but it's the most dusty thing ever to not it.
Like, belt I like the idea of Roman really being pushed to the limits, and doing whatever it takes to get to 1,000 days, including betraying his own flesh and blood.
Because day 1,000, I think, is Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that stays in the back of my head is, I don't know. Why not just go for the
I think that would be the...
You're almost there.
That might be one of the biggest moves of corporate malfeasance. I just... Number one, it would get everybody talking, though. You believe Cody lost his title match? What the hell were they thinking? I can't get there, Chris. I can't get there.
Get there, Jeff. Let's go there.
No. You sacrifice Cody Rhodes for Jey Uso.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Let's do it. Come on, Jeff. Let's do crime and sacrifice.
Let's end it there. No, we've gone long. I'm cutting us off there because we've had too much to drink. You've been smoking strong.
I have not been smoking marijuana during the course of the show.
Why not?
Yeah, I have been.
Okay, I've been drinking alcohol. We're both good.
I shouldn't have lied to you like that. That was mean.
I know, but we'll make up. We'll kiss and make up after the show.
Yeah, I know. I know you'll forgive me, but I still
we'll do a vigorous makeout session. You and I.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyways, before we make it weird, you can follow me at CraftGame13. You can follow Chris at Dr. Nove on Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. It will update as episodes come out because I don't tweet anything else on there. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. As I plugged earlier, if you want to hear more of me and a thorough deconstruction of Dynamite, every Wednesday night it drops late because we record right after the show. Myself and Paul Ace Fontaine on Fight Game Media, patreon.com/fightgamemedia for $5 a month. You can have all the shows over there, including Power Bombshells, In the Clinch, and The Boom, and all the other great shows there. But hey, Voices of Wrestling, we have great shows here too. 5-star Match Game, Music of the Mat with our friend Andrew Rich, The Flagship, of course, with Joe and Rich. Who could, I mean, Joe and Rich are just fantastic, to be honest with you. They were thorough this week on all the shows going on this weekend, like even like mini weirdo indie shows like I have a few friends doing. So, you know, Flagship is always good for thorough coverage. We're kind of like the village idiots of Voices of Wrestling here. Chris plays guitar, gives music lessons, smokes on the air. He's gonna tell you whatever he wants to plug right now.
Yeah, all right. So if you want music lessons or you want to see me take trips to northern New Mexico, you can go and follow me on the Instagram.
Afghanistan.
Yeah. So what Jeff is referencing is my trip to Taos today, where someone at a dispensary, I was talking to them and they were like, how are you liking it here? And I said to him, man, it's really pretty here. I love the mountains. You got mountains on all sides. You know, I was passing by a part of the Rio Grande. The water's like really blue and there's this really nice park that I was like sitting at for a minute, and he's like, yeah, it's kind of like that place, what's that place called, Afghanistan. And I'd never really thought about northern New Mexico being like Afghanistan, but
well, you get the postcards all the time, come to scenic Afghanistan.
I've always known that Afghanistan's a popular ski destination, or at least it was before all the political instability, but I never really thought about the close analogy between northern New Mexico and Afghanistan until it was brought to my attention this afternoon.
Enjoy the wrestling weekend, kids.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.